Okay, so imagine this. You've inherited some land, been its steward for centuries, and then all of a sudden the government says they're opening it up. Does that automatically mean you lose all your rights?
Right.
Well, that's the question at the heart. At the heart of our deep dive today, we're looking at Nebraska v. Parker, a Supreme Court case with some pretty major implications for tribal sovereignty and land rights.
Yeah, and you know, this case is fascinating because it's not just some, historical footnote.
Right.
It has these ripple effects that still impact tribal authority today.
Yeah.
Everything from, jurisdiction and taxes to things you might not expect, like liquor
Oh,
laws.
wow. Interesting. Okay. So we're focusing specifically on the Omaha Tribes Reservation in Nebraska.
Right.
Picture this. There's this village called Pender, and it sits right smack dab in the middle of the reservation's boundaries.
Yeah, and that's where the legal battle really heats up.
Okay.
Did Congress actually shrink the reservation way back in 1882, or does the tribe still have jurisdiction in Pender? I mean, that's what the Supreme Court had to decide.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
All right, so let's rewind the clock a little bit.
Okay.
The Omaha tribe established their reservation in 1854. We're talking a massive 300,000 acres.
Wow.
Over the years, they did cede some land, but 1882, that's where things get a little murky.
Yeah.
What happened then?
Well, in 1882, Congress passed this act to sell off what they called surplus reservation land to non-native settlers.
Okay.
But the wording of this act, it's far from clear.
Yeah.
Did Congress actually intend to shrink the reservation?
Yeah.
That's really the crux of the whole issue.
Okay, hold on. You said Surplus Land Acts.
Yeah.
For those of us who, aren't legal scholars,
Sure.
what exactly does that mean?
Good point. It's easy to assume that everyone knows these terms.
Right.
Essentially, surplus land acts were used by the U.S. government in the 19th century to open up, portions of the Native American reservations for non-native settlement. The
Gotcha.
idea was that, the tribes weren't using all the land, so
Right.
the excess could be, sold off. Of course, this was often done without the tribe's consent, and it resulted in significant land loss.
Yeah, not good. So back to 1882, this is the same year that a non-native settler named W.E. Peebles founded the village of Pender, right?
Yeah.
Talk about adding fuel to the fire.
Exactly. And fast forward to 2006.
Okay.
The Omaha tribe, they attempt to enforce their liquor laws within Pender, and that's when the legal battle really explodes.
You, the lawyers.
Right.
So the lower courts initially sided with the tribe, arguing that Congress wasn't clear about shrinking the reservation in that 1882 act.
Yeah.
But of course, this is just the beginning.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Nebraska appealed the decision, and the case climbed its way all the way up to the highest court in the land, the Supreme Court.
Wow.
And what's fascinating is that this seemingly local dispute over liquor laws
Right.
became this major showdown between state and tribal authority.
That's huge. And I know that the Supreme Court has a particular process they use when dealing with questions of tribal land.
Right.
It's not just a simple yes or no. They apply a specific legal test, don't they?
Yeah, they rely on what's called the Solem v. Bartlett test.
Okay.
And it looks at three key factors: the text of the law itself,
Okay.
the historical context surrounding the law's passage,
Gotcha.
and how the land in question has been treated since the law was enacted.
Okay, so let's unpack those, starting with the text.
Yeah.
What was it about the language of the 1882 Act that caused so much debate?
Well, what's particularly interesting is that the 1882 Act, it lacks the explicit language that you would typically expect to see.
Okay.
If Congress actually intended to diminish a reservation, there's no mention of cession or diminishment.
Interesting.
The wording is, shall we say, open to interpretation.
Okay, so the text itself is vague, but what about the historical context? How did the court interpret that aspect of the Solem v. Bartlett test?
Well, the historical context surrounding the passage of the 1882 Act,
Yeah.
it further muddies the waters. Remember, this was a time when the U.S. government was actively pursuing these policies that aimed at assimilating Native Americans and breaking up tribal lands.
Right.
So the court had to consider, whether the act was part of a broader effort to kind of undermine tribal sovereignty.
Yeah,
You know,
for sure.
it's tricky.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so we've got vague language.
Right.
We've got a murky historical context. What about the third part of the Solem v. Bartlett test?
Yeah.
How the land has been treated since 1882?
Right.
Did the government act like they still controlled this land, or did they treat it as part of the reservation?
That's a crucial point. And this is where it gets really interesting.
Okay.
The way the government handled the money from those land sales actually supports the tribe's position.
Oh, okay. I'm all ears. Explain how the money trail leads back to the question of sovereignty.
Okay, so typically when Congress diminishes a reservation, they pay the tribe a lump sum for the land they're taking.
Right.
Think of it like a buyout. But in this case, the proceeds from the land sales under the 1882 Act, they were distributed directly to the Omaha tribe.
That's a pretty significant detail.
It
It doesn't
is.
sound like the usual diminishment playbook, does it?
Not at all. It suggests that the land was still considered part of the reservation, even though it's being sold to non-native settlers.
Interesting. Okay, so the text is unclear. The historical context is complicated, and the money trail points toward the tribe's ongoing ownership. But what about the fact that over time, Pender became predominantly non-native? Doesn't that factor into the equation?
That's a common argument, but the Supreme Court was very clear on this point.
Yeah.
They emphasized that demographic shifts don't automatically diminish a reservation.
Okay.
Congress has to be crystal clear in its intentions to alter a reservation's boundaries.
So you can't just look at who's living where 100 years later and assume the reservation boundaries have changed. Congress has to explicitly say so, right?
The court is essentially saying, look, we're dealing with treaties here.
Yeah.
These are solemn agreements between sovereign nations. You can't just reinterpret them on a whim based on changing demographics.
Wow. This case feels like it goes way beyond a dispute over a single village.
It
It's
does.
setting a precedent for how all sorts of historical land agreements are interpreted, isn't it?
Absolutely. The court is sending a strong message. If you want to diminish a reservation, Congress needs to use clear, unambiguous language.
Yeah.
No more beating around the bush.
No more beating around the bush. Right? So we've walked through all the evidence and the legal arguments. Let's get to the big reveal. What was the Supreme Court's final verdict?
Drum roll, please. In a resounding 9-0 decision, the Supreme Court sided with the Omaha tribe. The
Wow.
reservation remains intact. It's a major victory for tribal sovereignty and sets a powerful precedent for future cases.
Wow, a unanimous decision from the Supreme
I
Court.
know.
That's rare, especially in a case as complex as this.
I know, right?
What do you think contributed to such a clear consensus?
I think several factors were at play. I think the court recognized the importance of upholding treaty rights and respecting tribal sovereignty.
Yeah.
The ambiguity of the 1882 Act, coupled with the government's actions regarding the land sales, I think it made it really difficult to justify diminishing the reservation.
This feels like a real turning point. After this ruling, it seems like it's going to be much harder for states to try to chip away at reservation boundaries, doesn't
I'd say so. Nebraska v. Parker creates this significant legal hurdle for any attempt to diminish reservations based on vague historical claims or shifting demographics. The court has drawn a line in the sand, emphasizing the need for clear congressional action to alter reservation boundaries.
So we've got vague language, we've got a murky historical context. What about the third part of the Solomon v. Bartlett test, how the land has been treated since 1882? Did the government act like they still controlled this land, or did they treat it as part of the reservation?
That's a really crucial point, and this is where it gets really interesting.
Okay.
The way the government handled the money from those land sales, it actually supports the tribe's position.
Oh, okay. I'm all ears. Explain how the money trail leads back to the question of sovereignty.
Well, typically when Congress diminishes a reservation, they pay the tribe like a lump sum for the land that they're taking.
Like a buyout.
Think of it like a buyout,
Okay.
But in this case, the proceeds from the land sales under the 1882 Act were distributed directly to the Omaha tribe.
Some pretty significant detail. It doesn't sound like the usual diminishment playbook, does it?
Not at all. It suggests that the land was still considered part of the reservation, even though it was being sold to non-native settlers.
Interesting. Okay, so the text is unclear. The historical context is complicated, and the money trail points toward the tribe's ongoing ownership. But what about the fact that over time, Pender became predominantly non-native? Doesn't that factor into the equation?
That's a common argument that comes up, but the Supreme Court was very clear on this point.
Okay.
They emphasized that demographic shifts don't automatically diminish a reservation.
Okay.
Congress has to be crystal clear in its intentions to alter a reservation's boundaries.
So you can't just look at who's living where 100 years later and assume that the reservation boundaries have changed. Congress has to explicitly say so.
The court is essentially saying, look, we're dealing with treaties here. These are solemn agreements between sovereign nations. You can't just reinterpret them on a whim based on changing demographics.
Wow, this case feels like it goes way beyond just a dispute over a single village.
It does, yeah.
It's setting a precedent for how all sorts of historical land agreements are interpreted, isn't it?
Absolutely. The court is sending a strong message here.
Yeah.
If you want to diminish a reservation, Congress needs to use clear, unambiguous language.
Right.
No more beating around the bush.
No more beating around the bush.
Exactly.
All right, so we've walked through all the evidence, all the legal arguments.
Yeah.
Let's get to the big reveal.
Okay.
What was the Supreme Court's final verdict?
Drumroll, please. In a resounding 9-0 decision, the Supreme Court sided with the Omaha tribe.
Wow.
The reservation remains intact.
Wow.
It's a major victory for tribal sovereignty.
Yeah.
And it sets a really powerful precedent for future cases.
Wow. A unanimous decision from the Supreme Court? That's rare.
I know.
Especially in a case as complex as this.
Yeah.
What do you think contributed to such a clear consensus?
I think several factors were at play here.
Okay.
I think the court recognized the importance of upholding treaty rights and respecting tribal sovereignty.
Yeah.
The ambiguity of the 1882 Act, coupled with the government's actions regarding the land sales,
right,
you know, made it really difficult to justify diminishing the reservation.
This feels like a real turning point.
Yeah.
After this ruling, it seems like it's going to be much harder for states to try to chip away at reservation boundaries, doesn't it?
I'd say so. Nebraska v. Parker creates this significant legal hurdle for any attempt to diminish reservations based on like vague historical claims or shifting demographics.
Yeah.
The court has drawn a line in the sand, emphasizing the need for clear congressional action to alter reservation boundaries.
So the Omaha tribe wins, their reservation remains whole. But this decision has, you know, ripples, right?
It does.
What does this mean for other tribes who are facing similar land disputes?
Yeah.
Cases where maybe those surplus land acts weren't so clear cut.
That's the million-dollar question.
Yeah.
This ruling could be a real game changer for tribes across the country.
Yeah.
It provides this powerful legal precedent for challenging those old agreements where Congress may have overstepped, you know?
Yeah, I'm thinking about all the cases we've seen where reservations were diminished.
Right.
Sometimes through treaties that were, let's just say, less than fair.
Yeah.
Could this ruling open the door for tribes to reclaim some of that lost land?
It's certainly possible. Nebraska v. Parker creates this much higher bar for diminishing reservations.
Uh-huh.
Tribes can now point to this case and argue that, you know, Congress needs to explicitly state its intentions.
Right.
No more vague language. Mm. No more assuming they meant to take land away.
It's almost like this case has the potential to redraw the map, literally.
Yeah.
We could see changes to reservation boundaries across the entire nation.
Yeah, that's not an exaggeration.
Wow.
This ruling is a really powerful reminder that history isn't set in stone.
Right.
The legal landscape is constantly evolving, and this case is a prime example of how court decisions can really shift the balance of power.
So if our listeners walk away from this deep dive with one key takeaway,
mm,
especially for those who, you know, work in this area of law,
yeah,
what should they be paying attention to?
I'd say the biggest takeaway is the importance of language. The power of words.
Yeah.
When you're dealing with tribal sovereignty, every single word in those treaties and acts of Congress matters. One little phrase can make all the difference. And this case really shows how crucial it is to scrutinize the text,
mm-hmm,
understand the historical context,
yeah,
and analyze the actions taken after a law's enactment.
And I think it's a good reminder for all of us to not just take those reservation boundaries for granted.
Right.
Those lines on a map, they represent a long and often very difficult struggle for sovereignty,
mm-hmm,
that continues to this day.
Absolutely. Nebraska v. Parker is a significant victory. But the fight for tribal sovereignty, it's far from over.
Yeah.
This case opens up all these new possibilities, new avenues for tribes to assert their rights and reclaim their rightful place in the legal landscape.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave our listeners with a challenge.
Okay.
Don't let this be the end of the conversation.
Yeah.
Learn about the history of tribal relations in your own state. Stay informed about the legal battles being fought,
mm-hmm,
and support tribal sovereignty however you can.
Right.
This is a fight for justice and respect, a fight to honor the inherent rights of tribal nations.
Well said. The future of tribal sovereignty really does depend on all of us being engaged and informed and ready to advocate for what's right.
That's it for our deep dive on Nebraska v. Parker. Thanks for listening.